Welcome to the latest installment of the Northampton Community Music Center podcast series. And today I'm sitting with Lily Sexton,
whose fiddling you heard in our introduction, and
who leads the Community Music Center's fiddle ensemble. Is that the right word for it?
Sure. Private fiddle students.
Yeah. Oh, so you do both. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the fiddle ensemble first. So can you just tell me a little bit about what it is, how it works?
Yeah, so it's still a bit in its development.
Is this your first year doing it?
Yes. First year in person, because right. We did it over Zoom in 2020, and I had a youth class, and then I had an adult class, and the idea is to just bring people together that want to fiddle and give them some opportunities to explore different styles of fiddling, that being old-time fiddling, bluegrass fiddling, a little bit of Celtic fiddling, and also a little Cajun fiddling as well. So, yeah, we just learn tunes and talk about the many stories that go into this history of the instrument. And
So how many people are in the group?
So this year there were about there were three or four people. You know, it's still kind of, as I said, developing, and and people are still finding out about it. And
okay, so I was going to ask you if it was all fiddles or you had some other instruments, but obviously with only three or four, you probably just have
just fiddles for right now, and you know, we'll see how that ends up.
Okay. Do you teach the tunes by ear, or do you have music for them?
I teach the tunes by ear. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we go just very, very step by step, breaking every part down into little sections and rehearsing them by rote, rehearsing them by repetition. And students are more than welcome to jot down reminders of, you know, if there's little parts that get them stumped. And we talk quite a bit about how that's the most traditional way of learning in many styles and traditions of fiddle music, is that it's generally learned by ear. And there are certain skills that you can develop as a fiddler in order to learn something by ear more quickly and more efficiently, so that it stays in your memory.
Could you talk about that for a sec? About like what, and you know, what do you suggest to people so that it's easier for them to learn by ear?
Yeah, I think that having a pretty good grasp on your scales in the most common fiddle tune keys, so that would be the G scale, D scale, A scale, C scale. All these are major scales, by the way. That's a good place to start. Learning the scales inside and out, learning the arpeggios inside and out, because those inform what notes you're going to be using most often and what notes you're probably not going to be using most often. So putting a little bit of logic behind, okay, why did we decide to go to a C-sharp note in this tune in A? Well, because C-sharp is part of the A major arpeggio, so okay, we have that down. And then another way is to, when you're hearing a tune at a jam, for instance, and you think, gosh, I'd really like to jump in, but I don't know this tune, I haven't learned it yet, can your ear just grab a little phrase? You know, if you hear something, do you mind if I play?
No.
If you hear, let's say it's Road to Columbus, and you hear, maybe you just hear that little, and you can play that, you know, and then you sort of can add, okay, maybe I'll add the next note that I hear in the phrase. So just
hopefully you won't be trying to add double stops right away.
No, and that, yeah, it's a lot easier to learn things single string melody for sure, but yeah, so those are two things, and then
do you ever get them playing scales in thirds, like going up a third and then C, E, D, F, G,
oh, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I see what you mean. Yeah.
I found that, like, extremely helpful for really learning your way around an instrument.
Yes, totally. So there's things like that. There's a pattern where you go, do, re, mi, fa, re, mi, fa, so, mi, di, di, di. Melodic patterns, recognition of melodic patterns is, like, very, when you're doing it, it feels, like, disconnected from songs in general, you know, but then once you have it, you know, as a frame of understanding music, it allows for easier and quicker learning of the tune.
So are the students that you have they come from a classical background, or are they starting off as fiddlers?
Some of my younger students, some of the kids that were in the fiddle class for kids, were coming from a classical background. And my adults are generally not. Mm-hmm. My adults are generally folks that have, you know, played fiddle, picked up the fiddle in their adult life, and have continued to play. So I personally come from a classical background, but it can be helpful. It can be helpful. It can also hold you back a little.
Right. Well, I always say classical technique never hurt anybody.
No, it didn't.
That's true. Was it a struggle when you switched over to fiddling to get yourself off the page?
No, because, well, actually, I was trained in the Suzuki method. Uh-huh. So my understanding of music from ages 4 to 11 was just by ear.
Right.
And I didn't start to sight read till age 11, and that was actually quite a bit of a struggle for me. I worked at it, and now it is fine. I teach my students a little younger than 11 years old. You know, I start a little earlier than that because, you know, it's just another way of being able to communicate music that can be very helpful. It was not a struggle for me to jump from, you know, classical music, I think, for me personally, was not really the thing that lit my soul on fire. Uh-huh. And bluegrass fiddling totally did. And I didn't realize how difficult it was to, you know, play in that style until I was so deep in it that I, you know, I didn't care that it was hard.
Right.
So.
Not that playing Bach or Mozart is easy to do it well.
Yeah, it's all a state of mind, I think, you know. It's all a state of mind, yeah.
Did your adult students start by reading music, or did they start with learning by ear? I mean, before they came to you.
I don't know the answer to that question.
So it hasn't been a struggle for you to get them to learn by ear?
I think it is a struggle. Well, I hesitate to use the word struggle because I do want people to come and learn. And not be, you know, put off by the fact that it can be challenging at times. I think that learning music by ear, if you have not done it from a young age, can definitely present some obstacles and some challenges. But there are little tricks, you know, there are these little things that you can, like, you know, knowing your scales, knowing your arpeggios, knowing your melodic patterns. Those little pieces of more theoretical, intellectual parts of music can just strengthen your ability to do that and will take away some of that challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how would you characterize the difference between fiddling and playing classical music? It is different.
It's very different, yeah. There's differences just all across the board. approach, reason for playing, I think, is a pretty huge difference. I think the reason that people fiddle is different than the reason that people play classical violin.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, maybe in its origin, you know, classical music and fiddle music originate from wanting to entertain through art. Uh-huh. But there's some key differences for sure, you know. Yeah, I think maybe I'm getting a little into the weeds here because I'm not an ethnomusicologist by any stretch. So I'll just stick to, you know, what the technique differences are. I teach, like, you know, that strong fundamental classical technique in how you hold the instrument, hold the bow, move your fingers, hold your left hand on the neck, because that, you know, allows you to play efficiently and allows you to play for, you know, many years of your life and without pain, without developing things that can actually harm your joints. It allows you to draw the best tone out of the instrument, no matter what you're trying to play on the instrument. So that's a similarity. A difference would be just fiddling uses some different right hand ideas, you know. So depending on the genre of classical music is so vast, and every composer uses different ideas with the bow. Fiddling, I think, has less differentiation in bowing. You've got sort of your like old time bowing, and you've got your devices you use for bluegrass, and you've got your devices you use for Cajun, and then some very specific devices for Celtic music. I don't know. This is a trick. That's a really broad question. You know, it's like, oh, what's the difference between you know, classical guitar and rock and roll guitar? It's like, okay, I don't know.
Well, if you could put the Portland contradance book in front of a classical player, and they would play the notes,
right,
and it might sound beautiful, but it might not sound like something you want to dance to.
Right. So, that's a key thing, right?
So what do you do as a fiddler that makes it something that you want to dance to?
A friend of mine, Chris Brashear, told me years ago, like, the notes, and I'm totally paraphrasing him because this was a long time ago, but when you're trying to play effectively as a bluegrass fiddler, you have to think about playing with a beat that somebody could dance to and with a cadence that somebody would like to dance to. You know what I mean? Relaxing is relaxing is very important, I think, to the classical player that wants to transition to fiddling, because I think that, you know, the poise that is required for classical music is not always necessary in fiddling. Articulation, sure. Power and drive and dynamics, sure. But there's a relaxation into a different kind of beat and cadence that, that fiddling, it's necessary in order to sound legit, you know.
So if you took, you know, the Portland contradance book, and you see the tune, and you could play it like a classical player, and it would be a pretty melody. But how do you, if you want to make it sound like Cajun, you might do it one way. You might, if you want to make it sound like bluegrass, you do another thing. If you want to make it sound Celtic, you do a third thing. If you want to make it sound old timey, you do a fourth thing.
Yep.
So, could you talk about how you would take a tune and make it sound like it came from somewhere else by playing it differently?
Yeah.
Because that is going to be the difference between...
Right.
Because you could play St. Anne's Reel, and it could be, it could sound Irish, or it could sound old-timey, or it could sound Cajun.
Right. Yeah. So other than the fact that you've, you know, got a little bit of a... There's some overlap in the repertoire among all of those genres, but a lot of them have very specific repertoire that,
right,
you know, doesn't bleed over. If you want something to sound Celtic, and again, I am not factoring in the many, many, many regions of Ireland that have different, you know, specific regional styles, but you'd put different ornamentals on it. You know, you'd probably be going for, like, you know, those little very quick turning around. You have a specific bowing accent that the name of it is slipping my mind, but you hear it quite a bit, and it's like it's a stutter almost in the bow. So that's Celtic in a nutshell. Old time has its own very specific kind of bowing. It's like this, it's like a swing feeling. It feels like the bow is really swinging through its accents. A lot of anticipating some beats, you know. time also uses lots and lots of, drone strings. I was about to say, I don't know if really I've ever heard an old-time tune that doesn't have a drone note going on in it. That's a really key thing. Uh-huh. Bluegrass, the idea of improvisation enters the conversation. Uh-huh. So that's a key element. Very, impressive sort of takes on melody. So Bill Monroe was very adamant that people play the melody, but they play it like themselves, and they play it, true to the melody, but with your own, sort of ideas on it. So that's kind of like the jazz influence comes in for bluegrass fiddling. Also uses a lot of double stops, also uses a lot of getting the beat into the song so that somebody could dance to it if they wanted to. Highly articulated, often very fast, unless you're playing a waltz. So, yeah, and then Cajun is just like its own world of beautiful, very vibey danceability. That bowing is kind of like this. I don't have a Cajun tune off the top of my head, but that's an example.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess those are just... I hope I don't get in trouble for anyone for saying, she doesn't know what she's talking about Cajun music, but that's my sort of nutshell of each one, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You will.
Let me segue to another question. Can you talk a little bit about what's the challenge of getting these fiddlers to play as a group as opposed to teaching privately?
Really, the only challenge that I think can be present is that some people will pick up things, everyone picks things up at a different pace.
Right.
So trying to keep everybody feeling like their time is being used well is my biggest challenge as a teacher, is just, trying to not go too fast, not go too slow, and make sure everybody's kind of feeling like they understand what's going on. Uh-huh. So that's... But playing in a group, more ideal with fiddling. It just is, you kind of like... When other people are playing around you, I think maybe you feel a little less self-conscious about making a mistake or something, like that. So it's beneficial for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I love it when you get 6 or 8 fiddlers in a room this size and had a really big sound. What fiddle players have inspired you over the years?
I think my biggest inspiration from a contemporary era would be Stuart Duncan. I think that not a player alive has the kind of ability to... Just the tone that he gets out of his instrument is phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that it's a very fine fiddle. I'm sure that it is a very fine... He could play any fiddle you put in his hands, I believe, and extract just the most unbelievably sweet sound. And his ideas, his improvisational ideas are so beautiful to me. Sometimes there are just musicians where... You hear their ideas and you think, if I were that level, I would have also probably thought, that's just, it just plays directly to my personal taste, what he does. He's incredible. And another fiddler from the contemporary era would be Michael Cleveland's playing. I think that his playing has more of it's a little more driving. It's a little bit more tenacious. It trends a little bit more flashy, I think, at times, but that's fine because he just, if you play that way with full confidence, it just works. And going back quite a ways in time, 40s and 50s, I think Art Stamper is an incredible fiddler. I'm blanking on who he played with at this point, but old time player and bluegrass player. He kind of had the ability to do both, which I think is very cool. Ralph Mayo was a fiddler that played a lot with the Stanley Brothers. His playing is just epic. It's just like another example of a fiddler where sometimes his ideas are just like really like almost aggressive, but he stands behind it and he follows through with it with his, you know, beautiful tone and just like it's just awesome.
Years ago, Itzhak Perlman discovered his Jewish roots and he got into klezmer music and he did a whole bunch of stuff with it. And it was somewhat controversial at the time because this classical player playing this folk music, and could he really do it right? I wonder, is there somebody, some great classical player who was born in Virginia or West Virginia and who discovered his roots and started playing fiddle tunes, and is there anybody like that, you know? I was just curious. And what you thought of...
I think that the communities that are, you know, the bluegrass music community, the old-time community, those are the ones that I'm most familiar with, are really welcoming. There are some rules of engagement, you know, there are some kind of... Anytime you're stepping into a musical community and tradition that you are new to, I think it's ideal to listen quite a bit, observe, understand. Every single community, every jam, every micro community within, you know, is going to have its own kind of etiquette and its own. But that being said, if classical first chair wanted to play Appalachian bluegrass music, then they'd be more than welcome to.
Right. You don't know anybody famous that,
no,
that decided?
I don't.
I was just curious.
But I know the other way around, which is, you know, Chris Thiele playing, you know, doing classical albums, and Bela Fleck doing classical albums, and Yo-Yo Ma collaborating with Goat Rodeo and stuff. So, you know, there is for sure commingling. But as far as the story of a fiddler or turning from classical to fiddling,
going over to the dark side.
The dark side, yeah. I'm not sure of that, but I will. I'll do some poking around because I think it'd be interesting to know. Okay. Yeah.
I know your primary musical activity, I guess, is your band Mama's Marmalade. Can you just talk about your band a little bit?
Sure. My band Mama's Marmalade is great. I love playing with them. This is a project that I've been involved in since pretty much my first day ever trying to play bluegrass music. So in that way, it's taught me a lot because it's brought me into the community at large and allowed me to explore. So the other people in the band right now, it's myself, Mitch Bordage on mandolin, and Sean Davis on guitar. Our mandolinist, Mitch, also did not grow up playing bluegrass music. He grew up doing some country, some folk and country with his dad, but mostly played rock and roll. That was his thing, electric guitar. So he was coming to this style of playing and writing also from a different background. And in that way, it kind of allows us to be a little bit bendy with the rules. I think our original music is doesn't really follow the typical kind of bluegrass formula, and that's fine. You know, it's the string, the sort of like bed of the three stringed instruments together, and a bass, allows a textural, it's just a beautiful textural canvas upon which you can kind of interpret and create and explore however you like.
Are you doing mostly original things, or are you doing, I'm writing your own music, or are you doing a lot of covers as well?
We do some covers in our live sets for sure. We like to cover some traditional bluegrass. We like to cover some very non-traditional bluegrass songs and see what we can do with them. So we're actually working on an EP of covers right now, which has been really, really fun. Yeah, I mean, I think the idea, with enough time and rehearsal and the right kind of headspace, is to mostly be creating our own original music, because that's why we're drawn to the craft in the first place. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's more satisfying than playing covers to you?
I would say so. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Obviously, right now, our main creative recording project is covers. So in that way, like, it's been really fun to take the covers that we're doing and re-envision them and interpret them in our own way. That can be a very inspiring thing to do if you're an artist with some creativity block, is to just, like, reinterpret somebody else's work, and it can get things kind of, you know, moving in your own creative pursuit. But, I love writing songs with them. They're great collaborators. They fill in all of the gaps that I have, and we all do that for one another.
To get back to the group at NCMC for a minute, do you envision that it could ever become an ensemble with mandolins and guitars and a bass as well, or is that something that doesn't interest you that much?
I think that's very interesting. Yeah. I personally do not instruct mandolinists or guitarists or bassists, so they would have to be people that could kind of go without too much guidance from me. But we have toyed with the idea of doing, like, a summer camp with my bandmates and have them come in and instruct groups of instrumentalists that play their instrument and kind of teach bluegrass ensemble, because that's sort of what it becomes if it's adding the other instruments in, is that now we're not teaching fiddle anymore, we're teaching bluegrass ensemble or old time ensemble or whatever, and that would be really fun. That'd be really really great to do.
Well, they do have a rock and roll ensemble here, so I could see why not have a bluegrass
ensemble. It just depends on people's interest in that and everybody timing and schedules and things like that. So, yeah, but I think that'd be a fun thing to try.
Okay. Well, I think I've asked all my questions, so I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me and tell me a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you.